I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The Food Scene is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart on the top right to donate. Do it now. You're listening to The Food Scene. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today on... It's not quite super summery hot, but it's hot enough, and we're leading into some mid-90 degree weather, so it's only appropriate to be thinking about ice cream or the adventures therewith.
I think it's always appropriate to be thinking about ice cream, but...
I was actually just in Massachusetts, and a funny fact that I learned when I went to school there was I think there is more ice cream eating per capita in that state than any other one in the country, more specifically in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's something that has always been such a pet peeve for me, because I'm like, I'm not asking you to eat it outside. You don't have to like sit in the snow with it. Like, you can eat ice cream indoors in the winter. You can sit by a fire and eat it. Like, it doesn't have to be so hot out. It doesn't have to be only a summer food.
Well, we're going to talk about that fire eating ice cream situation in a second, but first let me introduce Steph Ferrari of Ice Cream Adventures, an amazing cookbook. You used to own Hey Rosie, which was right down the street from
me,
too. A fantastic ice cream shop. And also senior editor of Life and Time. And we'll get to most of that later. But let's first start about these family farms in Connecticut. Not your own family, but places to go eat ice cream.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Shelton, which is probably equidistant between Fairfield and New Haven. So, I mean, those are the towns that I refer to, but very much these are they were farm towns. Like every town that I, you know, in that vicinity always had a farm, and my mom always used to take me to the farms to get ice cream. And I didn't realize that was unique or special, really, until I moved away from Connecticut.
Until you looked the cow in the face while eating a cone.
And honestly, I do, you know, that is one of my favorite things. It is to commune with the cows while I'm enjoying their product. But you know, I moved to California. I've lived in New York. I've lived in, you know, Tennessee. I've lived in all these places. And ice cream shops are so far removed from the farm that, you know, it was so unusual to me, because I'm so used to sitting like among the cows eating ice cream. And that was something that was so much fun for me growing up.
I go to Northern Michigan every summer, and there's this ice cream shop called Moomers.
I love
and
it.
And literally the pasture is outside, you know, right past the deck.
Yep.
And yeah, it closes that cycle in that amazing way that you
Definitely.
Think of ice cream as an agricultural product rather than a dessert.
100%. We used to go to a dairy to eat farm. I mean, to eat farm. We used to go to a dairy farm to eat ice cream, you know, rather than a shop, which is, you know, four walls and, you know, could be a coffee shop, could be anything. And ice cream shops are funny because you don't really, you know, you don't see much. You don't see equipment. You don't see anything like that. So, yeah, I like to eat with the cows.
Yeah.
I hope it's not insulting to them. I don't know.
To the cows themselves?
Yes.
It's not like you're eating a live part of them.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's like having tartare in front of a cow. Might be a little dicey, but I think ice cream's kind of cool.
Yeah. I would agree.
So what were your flavors back then?
Let's see. We did hundreds, actually, which is...
Oh, I don't even mean it. Hey, Rosie.
When you
were a child...
Absolutely,
There's a different palate when you're a youth versus now.
That is debatable as I eat Sour Patch Kids for breakfast. My favorite flavors growing up were definitely, I liked classics. I love mint chocolate chip. I love, you know, like the green stuff. Like I want it full of, you know, dye. You know, I want like green dyed mint chip. I loved anything with peanut butter. My sister and I were like crazy peanut butter addicts. So if it was peanut butter, I've never been a huge chocolate fan. Like I'm not a chocolate ice cream person. There's not even a chocolate recipe in my book. I would say anything with peanut butter, and I like fruit based flavors. So I really like a raspberry, something with jam. Right now, my favorite ice cream at my favorite farm in Connecticut is raspberry chocolate chunk. And I get that with Cow Tracks, which has like, you know, peanut butter and caramel. And it's kind of like my take on like a peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's at Ferris Acres in Connecticut. And that's in Newtown, Connecticut. So.
See, I'm going to go not out on a limb, but ask you, are you a lambic drinker?
Oh, I am a. Sour beers are, you know, make up 90% of my cellar.
But chocolate stouts, those kind of things?
So I'm like I'm a booze drinker. Like I like boozy stuffs. Like when I drink whiskey or, you know, I drink less cocktails and more like straight booze. So I do like some of the beers that get really boozy because I treat them more like a cognac. So I do like some of those like super high alcohol, like really booze forward stouts and stuff like that that are out there.
So people probably wonder why, you know, we went from dessert to, you know, after meal drinks or pre-meal or during, but your formative kind of flavor profile may have come from the craft brew industry.
Definitely. Like, you know, 110%. I mean, it was, heavily influential in how I looked at flavor. In fact, I think, you know, the way that I interpret flavor in general, whether it's food or dessert or anything, to me, it all came from beer.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Patrick Rue and the brewery spelled B-R-U-E-R-Y.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the most respected, you know, breweries in the country, you know, is it in the OC?
It is. It's in Orange County. They started in Placentia, which is the worst name on earth for for a town or anything. But now they have also a barrel house in Anaheim. That is where. So I started working when I was living on the East Coast. I got a job sort of serendipitously at the Ginger Man in Connecticut, which they also have a location here in New York, and it's a beer bar that is, you know, really formidable. And I got. Cut my teeth there and got really kind of obsessive about beer and decided I wanted to go and learn about it. So I packed up and moved to California because that's what you do when you want to learn about beer, especially at this time. That was like the epicenter of the beer business. So I really stumbled into an amazing gig at the brewery. I was like the fourth or fifth employee there. So it was so new and so... we were such like a small, scrappy team. And Patrick, who founded the brewery, is, in my mind, one of the most genius flavor producers. I don't know if that's a real term, but I might have made it up.
I think it's appropriate kind of stopping there for a second, talking about taste limitations, because that's what the brewery was able to do. And that's what you did at Hey Rosie and within this book, is that, you know, there are preconceptions of, well, let's talk about the Great American Beer Festival.
Right.
There used to be X amount of flavor profiles that you could win a medal for, and now there's probably tenfold.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, piss yellow beer anymore.
Right.
You can have this spectrum of delicious craft things.
Definitely. And, you know, that's what the craft beer industry has really, I think, it's just fun. I mean, these guys are just doing whatever. And Patrick, to me, blew my mind because I was being introduced to some really cool beers, you know, from the Ginger Man, and people were doing things and they were, you know, they were starting to talk about having like coriander in beer and things that had been there, but you know, nobody was really talking about them. And I was certainly, you know, people were drinking Blue Moon and it was like changing the world. And then I get out to California and Patrick is making beers with Thai basil and chamomile and lavender. And I was just like, what is this guy doing? And he just, you know, he changed my world in terms of like how to that limitation that, you know, he broke those limitations to me.
Then at what point did you have enough to drink and wanted to move into ice cream?
Oh my God. Well, there was never really enough to drink, but, I worked at the brewery for three years there. And then I, you know, got kind of homesick and moved back to New York and, I continued to work for them here for a little while. I did some sales stuff. I would do some of that kind of host events here in New York. But I knew, you know, the other thing that Patrick did for me in addition to inspiring me flavor-wise was I really learned a lot about business and, you know, the small business industry. And I just, like, loved that idea. And I knew I kind of wanted to do something for myself. And I really actually spent the majority of my time building my business plan, writing a business plan for a brewery. That was my plan, was to open a brewery here in New York. And went back and forth on it a ton. And then one day I was just sort of like, I was like, there's something like sort of off here. Like, I know I want to do this. I'm just not sure. Maybe it's the actual product. So I kind of went back to my roots, which is, you know, ice cream, which that was the thing that I grew up being really obsessed with. And I was like, maybe I can just repurpose this entire business model and swap the product.
Find out and replace beer for ice
exactly,
cream.
Exactly. So that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about this 120-year-old program at Penn State, this ice cream course where small businesses like yours have come out of. And I say small, but I also mean very large, because mm-hmm. you got Ben and Jerry's, uh-huh. Jenny's Splendid. I mean, this is the place to go to learn about the base.
Yeah, and really beyond. I mean, actually, the program, it's funny. It's I met Jenny Brittenbauer last week, and we were actually having this conversation because the program initially was developed really for major, massive companies that are, you know, the Nestles and the Unilevers that are making tons and tons of ice cream. And in recent years, because of like the artisanal food movement and people really wanting to understand their crafts better, the year that I went, I mean, it was probably an equal split between, you know, like CEOs of giant conglomerate ice cream producers and like people like me who were like, hey, I live in Brooklyn. I want to make artisanal ice cream. And they were like, I don't know how to tailor this program for both of you. So, but it's held every year. It's legendary, as are the temperatures. It was -9 degrees every day that I was there, and we're sitting indoors eating ice cream. So that should be a testament to why there's no ice cream season.
Yeah. Sitting by the fire.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it did what I wanted it to in terms of, you know, when I was studying to become a Cicerone for beer, I was learning about off flavors. I was learning about the things that could be wrong, the defects in beer and things like that. And this was very much that for ice cream. We were tasting bad ice cream. We were tasting flawed ice cream. We were understanding like texture and all the things that were, you know, that go into it. And that's really what I wanted, was that foundation.
Yeah, throwing around terms like mouthfeel and meltdown.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, gummy and short and crumbly and all these things that, you know, could be wrong with ice cream now that, you know.
Well, we're going to talk about what's right with ice cream and that metamorphosis, you know, from the first firm and frozen bites to that final one nearing a liquid state. You've been listening to The Food Scene. We'll be right back.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
And welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Today with Steph Ferrari of Ice Cream Adventures, the book. I can see it being a movie, a video game.
Comic book. That's how I originally envisioned it. I was like, let's make a comic book. Ice Cream will be the character. It'll be a hero. We'll give it a cape.
We even talked about anything comical about Ice Cream yet. We were talking about the off notes before, but I mean, let's talk about the on notes. You know, what is so good, what is so tantalizing about that first bite to the last one?
Everything. I mean, I love the whole process of eating ice cream. I mean, I know we only have, you know, a certain amount of time here. Otherwise, I could probably, like, you know, wax poetic about ice cream for the next 3 hours. But I love soft serve. I love hard ice cream. I love the different flavors. I mean, for me, you know, the stages of it from, like, when it's hard and frozen to when it's like just about a melty pool. I mean, I was the kid that was like, you know, making soup out of it.
Yeah.
Enjoying that just as much.
So do you still strategize when you eat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
How do you eat a cone?
Soft serve or hard ice cream? It's, you know.
Let's start with hard.
Hard ice cream, it depends how many flavors, if I have more than one flavor. If the flavor has mix-ins, like...
I just realized I'm going down a wormhole.
I was going to say, this is talked about in the book a little bit. But yeah, I mean, if there's stuff in it, you know, I really try to give it a few minutes to warm up because I don't want to, like, be digging them out with my, you know, with my teeth.
Yeah.
I like to let them kind of naturally become available.
So, so is it even worth asking cone or cup? Because we went right in the cone.
Yeah, actually. So I am hard ice cream, always cup. Soft ice cream, always cone.
There it is. That's a great rule to live by.
That's my rule.
So, I mean, in the book too, you know, you're split into sections where you, well, first let's talk about these partners in cream, because there's nothing more than I love than a couple of very special toppings.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, and I'm not saying this in any perverted or innuendic way, I used to love wet nuts.
You can't say wet nuts without it sounding
And I actually
perverted.
Used to love wet nuts.
Yeah.
And now I'm already blushing even thinking about ordering it. But since then, I've developed a taste for chocolate and a couple other things. But I could not get over reading about malted salted toffee.
Oh, my gosh. That stuff is just... I mean, that took over the ice cream for some people. We had to start selling it, like, in, you know, on its own because it was just... absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love malt. Malt is like one of my favorite flavors.
Oh, me too. I mean, and then later on in the book, you have an Oreo and Ovaltine, which is, you know, kind of malty as well.
Yep, exactly. But that toffee is, I have to really say that the, who I collaborated with on that recipe, her name is Chrissy Ward. She perfected that. And it was, the salt is really what.
Yeah.
What seals the deal?
And I see that as a thread through a lot of your ice creams, too. Salt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having... And savory as well, which is unlike a lot of other, you know, parlors that you see. And I know you were saying you're a peanut butter fanatic, and you have honey peanut butter sauce. But then there's mint cherry compote, lemon curd, honey mustard swirl, tomato caramel sauce, quick pickled berries. You start flooding into this zone of ice cream that I've never thought about exploring before.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened for one of the, like, sort of epiphany moments that I had was my wife, like, is a pasta fanatic. Like, she could never have ice cream again for the rest of her life, but, you know, pasta, that's her thing. So we were eating it was a pasta with a cream sauce of some kind. And basically, I'm talking to her. I'm like, why don't you like ice cream? You know, what's this cream sauce is basically ice cream. If I put this in an ice cream machine, you'd have like, you know, cacio pepe ice cream or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, we eat so many cream sauces. We never consider that. I mean, ice cream at its most basic, it's an emulsion. It's, you know, sugar and milk and cream. And so it doesn't have to be sweet. You know, you can have all these different flavors with it and make really interesting things. And cream is just, you know, it's just a vehicle.
Yeah, and you use other cheeses as well. Feta, you know, I've seen goat cheese, I've seen cream cheeses in the book. But, you know, thinking along the lines of converting something that, you know, is in one genre, pasta, and then turning it into ice cream, do you kind of go through categories like, what snack can I make? What salad can I make? What sandwich can I make?
Oh, like... everything that I eat, I'm like, oh, I bet this would be a good ice cream. I bet you could take, well, if you just isolated this flavor and use this, well, you can't use that, but we can substitute for this, you know, that's sort of like strategizing, like you said.
Well, let's talk about sriracha. I'm not even going to say it again. It's such a hard word for me
that,
to say.
It's that hot sauce.
Popcorn.
Rooster sauce.
Ice cream. Yeah. Rooster sauce, yeah. Popcorn, ice cream.
Yeah, so that was one of my first recipes for Hey Rosie. I am also an popcorn aficionado, if I do say so myself. And I spend a lot of time researching popcorn. And anyway, I eat it every night before I go to sleep. It's like my midnight snack. And I love to put sriracha on it, but the sriracha will wet the popcorn, makes it soggy. So I have a dehydrator at home, and I one night started messing with it, and I was dehydrating the sriracha so that I could make flakes out of it for my popcorn. And I had had popcorn ice cream before, and once I had these flakes, I was like, I bet this is a way to get this into ice cream without adding moisture to it. So I made a popcorn ice cream, and then I used those dehydrated sriracha flakes, and I mixed it in, and people just, like, my friends were just like, what did you do? And, a little bit of salt and this, like, really, like, you know, the corn flavor of the popcorn. And the beauty is that when you eat something hot, people are always like, oh, drink milk. Well, this kind of neutralizes the acid and the heat in the sriracha naturally because it's ice cream.
Yeah. So how often are you trying to put something in ice cream that shouldn't be
there?
That
doesn't belong there?
Yeah. Because,
every day.
I mean, let's talk about alcohol. I mean, when you're trying to build an ice cream, too much air, too much water, and then certainly too much alcohol are all no-nos.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, well, there's a recipe in the book for, it's called, I think India Pale Ice Cream.
IPI.
IPI. Yeah. And that speaks to that very much because a lot of people were making beer ice cream and they were like, putting beer in it, now you're adding moisture. Okay. So we reduce the beer, we reduce it into a syrup. Okay. Well, that kind of works, but sometimes it can get too sweet because now you have sugar in your ice cream. You have this like really syrupy, you know, sugary syrup. So I started to think about the components of what makes an IPA taste like an IPA. It's malt, it's hops, obviously. And hops are really, at the end of the day, it's like an herbal infusion. So rather than, try to reduce an IPA down to a syrup, which would make like a pretty bitter syrup, honestly, and sweet, or try to add the beer to it directly, I just infuse the cream with hops, sort of a dry hop method, which, you know, brewers do with fresh hops, and then pulled some of the other, you know, cherry picked some of the other things from an IPA, like, certain malts, and there's a Belgian candy syrup in it, which is a beer ingredient. So I went straight to the brewer's pantry rather than trying to force the beer in and winding up with, inefficient product.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about other pantries, pretzel, honey mustard, which is an ice cream of yours. That is the snack cabinet more than it is a pantry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I live in the snack cabinet. So, we did a bunch of like summery flavors once, and I love like pretzels and honey mustard, and honey mustard is, you know, it's got a sweetness, and again, it sort of works with that like spicy kick of mustard. And I had been infusing pretzels into ice cream and I loved that. And it just, you know, if you let yourself not, you know, if you don't think so much about it, these things really work, you know, like they're flavors that you already know and love. It's just in a different way.
It's just a different vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so is an everything bagel shake.
Yeah, that was another attempt for me to get my wife to eat more ice cream. She loves those everything bagels. I was like, okay, well, I'm going
to
make you.
Is she like the only person in the world that it has to be a ploy to get her to eat ice cream? Usually it's the other way around.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we honeymooned in Italy, which was like perfect because she had her pasta, I had my gelato, and we were just like, that was fine. It was perfect.
Absolute bliss.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Sunday construction just because I feel like you certainly have this mind of building something in a specific way. And, you know, you get a Sunday and it definitely has its layers, but there's got to be a methodology behind there.
Oh, this is another subject that I can get really geeky on. But, you know, you have to look at, you know, I work with a lot of chefs in writing and stuff like that, and the conversations are always the same. You want contrast, you want balance, you want acid, you want, you know, you want sweetness, you want crunch and texture, and I have seen more sundaes that become a total mess of flavors and textures, and there's just like, you know, gloop at the bottom. And so I'm very careful about how to build those and what you're really going for. But you definitely have to have, I love to have some like warm and cold hot fudge or whatever. Definitely textural contrast, I think, is so important. And the selection of flavors. You can't just slap a bunch of flavors together. And, you know, it's these frozen yogurt bars vex me because, you know, you go there and I watch people. And I'm just like, nothing, none of that goes together. What are you doing? You can't put, you know, the Sour Patch Kids with the.
You could be a curator.
But, yeah. Oh, I would love that.
Like a concierge.
If
or
someone would pay me to do that, I would be so happy.
Yeah. Because you can go astray. Mm-hmm. I mean, even from someone who confesses their love for Sour Patch Kids. Mm-hmm.
It
doesn't go with everything.
No, and I don't like them in ice cream either because, you know, they get really hard and, you know, certain things belong there and certain things don't. And, hey, it's a matter of preference, obviously.
Yeah. But. Well, I mean, we're in prime ice cream season right now. You know, you hear the Mr. Softy truck and you run for it.
Constantly.
What is your order there?
So Mr. Softy actually catered my wedding. We skipped the wedding cake and had a Mr. Softy truck instead. My order at Mr. Softy is vanilla ice cream cone with rainbow sprinkles. Done.
Done.
Yep.
Easy peasy.
Yep.
Have you encountered one since being back in New York?
Yesterday. And I'm on the hunt today.
Yeah, I love how you said that with such a straight face. Like, yesterday, and that will not be the last
yesterday
time.
Yesterday in Madison Square Park. I saw one again in Union Square. I was considering the second, but we did have dinner plans. So.
Yeah. I mean, New York versus L.A. ice cream, there's good stuff in both places.
There. So L.A. is just starting to, in my mind, really get some traction in ice cream. But it's different. There are a lot of imports. I mean, we have Salt and Straw out there now, which is a Portland brand. We have Jenny's, which is really an Ohio brand originally. But new place called Magpies opened up recently that specializes in soft serve, and I'm loving it.
See, I feel like you should put an ice cream map together.
Oh, that would be fun, too.
Because I'm sure you get people asking you all the time, oh, what kind should I make? But also, where should I go mm-hmm. eat ice cream? I mean, idyllically, where within the country and within the world would you be sitting right now lapping up a cone?
Ferris Acres in Connecticut. Yeah. That is honestly that's my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know recently you got to interview Jenny of Jenny Splendid. Mm-hmm. You work for this wonderful magazine, Life and Time. Mm-hmm. You know, someone from the ice cream industry interviewing someone else from that. What did you ask her? What did you want to say through, you know, the platform of that magazine that, you know, people don't know about ice cream?
Honestly, my questions for her were a lot of business related stuff. I mean, there were things in opening an ice cream business that just blew my mind when I was like, oh, this is a really challenging product, you know? And she's been such a trailblazer and so brilliant about how she handles the business. And, but in my mind, I think Jenny and Jenny's Ice Cream they do such a phenomenal job of producing flavors that are just so clean and evocative and really just, if they say it tastes like fennel, it tastes like you're chewing on, like it's delicious. It's just the most pure representation of whatever that is. So I had a lot of geeky science questions about that too. How did you get such intense fennel flavor in this?
I mean, is that what your ice cream is like? Are you looking for that pure form of something? Or are you looking for this rounder kind of conceptual, theoretical flavor?
My like real interest when it comes to ice cream is trying to figure out how to make the cream really taste like something else, because you can go the route of like, here's a sweet cream base and let's put like a really wonderful cookie or toffee or whatever in it. And we do that too. And there's that in the book, but I'm fascinated by how to make it really taste like something else entirely. And, you know, that's another thing I think I really got in beer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you make an ice cream taste like salt and sand?
Mm-hmm.
And why would you want to eat a beach?
That is one of my favorite flavors, to be honest with you. It sounds crazy, but I love that like crunchy sand in my teeth after a day at the beach. You know, you have that like salt in your mouth from the water, and you've got like some sand in your teeth. And salt and brown sugar in ice cream and sort of folded really gently so that you don't mix in the sugar, so it's still kind of crunchy, with flaked sea salt in sweet cream. Like that, to me, was one of our best-selling flavors. People were really surprised, I think, by the fact that they liked that textural element, and I just loved it.
See, screw fireplace. I want to eat that ice cream on a beach.
Yeah.
Double up on the sand and
yeah, yeah.
salt.
I will say it's It's good. It's good. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to have you in, and you know, I'm going out for ice cream after this for sure. But everyone else should go out and check out Ice Cream Adventures, out now by Rodale. Steph Ferrari, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big thank you to Whole Foods for sponsoring Cookies, the wonderful music at the top and mid part of this show, and David for engineering. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Super summery hot, but it's hot enough and we're leading into some mid 90 degree weather, so it's only appropriate to be thinking about ice cream or the adventures therewith.
I think it's always appropriate to be thinking about ice cream, but
I was actually just in Massachusetts, and a funny fact that I learned when I went to school there was I think there is more ice cream eating per capita in that state than any other one in the country, more specifically in the winter.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that has always been such a pet peeve for me, because I'm like, I'm not asking you to eat it outside. You don't have to like sit in the snow with it. Like, you can eat ice cream indoors in the winter. You can sit by a fire and eat it. Like, it doesn't have to be so hot out. It doesn't have to be only a summer food.
Well, we're going to talk about that fire eating ice cream situation in a second. But first, let me introduce Steph Ferrari of Ice Cream Adventures, an amazing cookbook. You used to own Hey Rosie, which was right down the street from me, too. A fantastic ice cream shop. And also senior editor of Life and Time. And we'll get to most of that later. But let's first start about these family farms in Connecticut. Not your own family, but places to go eat ice cream.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Shelton, which is probably equidistant between Fairfield and New Haven. So, I mean, those are the towns that I refer to, but very much these are they were farm towns. Like every town that I, you know, in that vicinity always had a farm, and my mom always used to take me to the farms to get ice cream. And I didn't realize that was unique or special, really, until I moved away from Connecticut.
Until you looked the cow in the face while eating a cone.
And honestly, I do, you know, that is one of my favorite things. It is to commune with the cows while I'm enjoying their product. But you know, I moved to California. I've lived in New York. I've lived in, you know, Tennessee. I've lived in all these places. And ice cream shops are so far removed from the farm that, you know, it was so unusual to me, because I'm so used to sitting like among the cows eating ice cream. And that was something that was so much fun for me growing up.
I go to Northern Michigan every summer, and there's this ice cream shop called Moomers.
Moomers. I love
and
it.
And literally the pasture is outside, you know, right past the deck.
Yep.
And yeah, it closes that cycle in that amazing way that you think of ice cream as an agricultural product rather than dessert.
100%. We used to go to a dairy to eat farm. I mean, to eat farm. We used to go to a dairy farm to eat ice cream, you know, rather than a shop, which is, you know, four walls and, you know, could be a coffee shop, could be anything. And ice cream shops are funny because you don't really, you know, you don't see much. You don't see equipment. You don't see anything like that. So, yeah, I like to eat with the cows.
Yeah.
I hope it's not insulting to them. I don't know.
To the cows themselves?
Yes.
It's not like you're eating a live part of them.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
It's like having tartare in front of a cow. Might be a little dicey, but I think ice cream's kind of cool.
Yeah. I would agree.
So what were your flavors back then?
Let's see. We did hundreds, actually, which is...
Oh, I don't even mean it. Hey, Rosie, you were a child... Oh,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
There's a different palate when you're a youth versus now.
That is debatable, as I eat Sour Patch Kids for breakfast. My favorite flavors growing up were definitely... I liked classics. I love mint chocolate chip. I love, you know, like the green stuff. Like, I want it full of, you know, dye. You know, I want, like, green dyed mint chip. I loved anything with peanut butter. My sister and I were like crazy peanut butter addicts. So if it was peanut butter, I've never been a huge chocolate fan. Like, I'm not a chocolate ice cream person. There's not even a chocolate recipe in my book. So yeah, I would say anything with peanut butter, and I like fruit based flavors. So I really like a raspberry, something with jam. Right now, my favorite ice cream at my favorite farm in Connecticut is raspberry chocolate chunk. And I get that with Cow Tracks, which has peanut butter and caramel. And it's kind of like my take on like a peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's at Ferris Acres in Connecticut, and that's in Newtown, Connecticut. So
see, I'm going to go not out on a limb, but ask you, are you a lambic drinker?
Oh, I am a... Sour beers are, you know, make up 90% of my cellar.
But chocolate stouts, those kind of things?
So I'm like I'm a booze drinker. Like, I like boozy stuffs. Like, when I drink whiskey or, you know, I drink less cocktails and more like straight booze. So I do like some of the beers that get really boozy because I treat them more like a cognac. So I do like some of those like super high alcohol, like really booze forward stouts and stuff like that that are out there.
So people probably wonder why, you know, we went from dessert to, you know, after meal drinks or pre-meal or during, but your formative kind of flavor profile may have come from the craft brew industry.
Definitely. Like, 110%. I mean, it was, heavily influential in how I looked at flavor. In fact, I think, you know, the way that I interpret flavor in general, whether it's food or dessert or anything, to me, it all came from beer.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Patrick Brewery and the brewery spelled B-R-U-E-R-Y.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the most respected, you know, breweries in the country, you know, is it in the OC?
It is. It's in Orange County. They started in Placentia, which is the worst name on earth for for a town or anything. But now they have also a barrel house in Anaheim. That is where. So I started working when I was living on the East Coast. I got a job sort of serendipitously at the Ginger Man in Connecticut, which they also have a location here in New York, and it's a beer bar that is, you know, really formidable. And I cut my teeth there and got really kind of obsessive about beer and decided I wanted to go and learn about it. So I packed up and moved to California because that's what you do when you want to learn about beer, especially at this time. That was like the epicenter of the beer business. So I really stumbled into an amazing gig at the brewery. I was like the fourth or fifth employee there. So it was so new and so... we were such like a small, scrappy team. And Patrick, who founded the brewery, is, in my mind, one of the most genius flavor producers. I don't know if that's a real term,
no,
but I might have made it up.
I think it's appropriate kind of stopping there for a second, talking about taste limitations, because that's what the brewery was able to do. And that's what you did at Hey Rosie and within this book, is that, you know, there are preconceptions of, well, let's talk about the Great American Beer Festival.
Right.
There used to be X amount of flavor profiles that you could win a medal for, and now there's probably tenfold.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, piss yellow beer anymore.
Right.
You can have this spectrum of delicious craft things.
Definitely. And, you know, that's what the craft beer industry has really, I think, it's just fun. I mean, these guys are just doing whatever. And Patrick, to me, blew my mind because I was being introduced to some really cool beers, you know, from the Ginger Man, and people were doing things and they were starting to talk about having like coriander in beer and things that had been there, but, you know, nobody was really talking about them. And I was certainly, you know, people were drinking Blue Moon and it was like changing the world. And then I get out to California and Patrick is making beers with Thai basil and chamomile and lavender. And I was just like, what is this guy doing? And he just, you know, he changed my world in terms of like that limitation that, you know, he broke those limitations to me.
Then at what point did you have enough to drink and wanted to move into ice cream?
Oh my God. Well, there was never really enough to drink, but, I worked at the brewery for three years there, and then I, you know, got kind of homesick and moved back to New York, and I continued to work for them here for a little while. I did some sales stuff. I would do some of that kind of host events here in New York. But I knew, you know, the other thing that Patrick did for me, in addition to inspiring me flavor-wise, was I really learned a lot about business and, you know, the small business industry. And I just, like, loved that idea. And I knew I kind of wanted to do something for myself. And I really actually spent the majority of my time building my business plan, writing a business plan for a brewery. That was my plan, was to open a brewery here in New York. And went back and forth on it a ton. And then one day I was just sort of like, I was like, there's something like sort of off here. Like, I know I want to do this. I'm just not sure. Maybe it's the actual product. So I kind of went back to my roots, which is, you know, ice cream, which that was the thing that I grew up being really obsessed with. And I was like, maybe I can just repurpose this entire business model and swap the product.
And replace beer for ice cream.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about this 120-year-old program at Penn State, this ice cream course where small businesses like yours have come out of. And I say small, but I also mean very large, because you got Ben and Jerry's, Jenny's Splendid. I mean, this is the place to go to learn about the base.
Yeah, and really beyond. I mean, actually, the program, it's funny. I met Jenny Brittenbauer last week, and we were actually having this conversation, because the program initially was developed really for major, massive companies that are, you know, the Nestles and the Unilevers that are making tons and tons of ice cream. And in recent years, because of like the artisanal food movement and people really wanting to understand their crafts better, the year that I went, I mean, it was probably an equal split between, you know, like CEOs of giant conglomerate ice cream producers and like people like me who were like, hey, I live in Brooklyn, I want to make artisanal ice cream, and they were like, I don't know how to tailor this program for both of you. So but it's held every year. It's legendary, as are the temperatures. It was -9 degrees every day that I was there, and we're sitting indoors eating ice cream. So that should be a testament to why there's no ice cream season.
Yeah. Sitting by the fire.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it did what I wanted it to in terms of, you know, when I was studying to become a Cicerone for beer, I was learning about off flavors. I was learning about the things that could be wrong, the defects in beer and things like that. And this was very much that for ice cream. We were tasting bad ice cream. We were tasting flawed ice cream. We were understanding like texture and all the things that were, you know, that go into it. And that's really what I wanted, was that foundation.
Yeah. Throwing around terms like mouthfeel and meltdown.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, gummy and short and crumbly and all these things that, you know, could be wrong with ice cream now that, you know.
Well, we're going to talk about what's right with ice cream and that metamorphosis, you know, from the first firm and frozen bites to that final one nearing a liquid state. You've been listening to The Food Scene. We'll be right back.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Today with Steph Ferrari of Ice Cream Adventures, the book. I can see it being a movie, a video game.
Comic book. That's how I originally envisioned it. I was like, let's make a comic book. Ice Cream will be the character. It'll be a hero. We'll give it a cape.
We even talked about anything comical about ice cream yet. We were talking about the off notes before, but I mean, let's talk about the on notes. Mm. You know, what is so good, what is so tantalizing about that first bite to the last one?
Everything. everything. I mean, I love the whole process of eating ice cream. I mean, I know we only have, you know, a certain amount of time here. Otherwise, I could probably, like, you know, wax poetic about ice cream for the next 3 hours. But I love soft serve. I love hard ice cream. I love the different flavors. I mean, for me, you know, the stages of it from, like, when it's hard and frozen to when it's, like, just about a melty pool. I mean, I was the kid that was, like, you know, making soup out of it.
Yeah.
Enjoying that just as much.
So do you still strategize when you eat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God,
how
yeah.
do you eat a cone?
Soft serve or hard ice cream? It's, you know.
Let's start with hard.
Hard ice cream, it depends how many flavors, if I have more than one flavor. If the flavor has mix-ins, like...
I just realized I'm going down a wormhole.
I was going to say, this is talked about in the book a little bit. But yeah, I mean, if there's stuff in it, you know, I really try to give it a few minutes to warm up because I don't want to, like, be digging them out with my, you know, with my teeth.
Yeah.
I like to let them kind of naturally become available.
So, so is it even worth asking cone or cup? Because we went right in the cone.
Yeah, actually. So I am hard ice cream, always cup. Soft ice cream, always cone.
There it is. That's a great rule to live by.
That's my rule.
So, I mean, in the book, too, you know, you're split into sections where you... Well, first, let's talk about these partners in cream. Because there's nothing more than I love than a couple of very special toppings.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, and I'm not saying this in any perverted or innuendic way, I used to love wet nuts.
You can't say wet
no.
nuts without it sounding
And I actually
perverted.
Used to love wet nuts.
Yeah.
And now I'm already blushing even thinking about ordering it. But since then, I've developed a taste for chocolate and a couple other things. But I could not get over reading about malted salted toffee.
Oh, my gosh. That stuff is just... I mean, that took over the ice cream for some people. We had to start selling it, like, in, you know, on its own because it was just... absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love malt. Malt is, like, one of my favorite flavors.
Oh, me too. I mean, and then later on in the book, you have an Oreo and Ovaltine, which is, you know,
yep.
kind of malty
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yep, exactly. And, but that toffee is, I have to really say that the, who I collaborated with on that recipe, her name is Chrissy Ward, she perfected that. And the salt is really what...
Yeah.
What seals the deal.
And I see that as a thread through a lot of your ice creams, too.
Mm.
Salt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having... And savory as well, mm-hmm. which is unlike a lot of other, you know, parlors that you see. And I know you were saying you're a peanut butter fanatic,
mm.
and you have honey peanut butter sauce. But then there's mint cherry compote, lemon curd, honey mustard swirl, tomato caramel sauce, quick pickled berries. You start flooding into this zone of ice cream that I've never thought about exploring before.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened for one of the, like, sort of epiphany moments that I had was my wife, like, is a pasta fanatic. Like, she could never have ice cream again for the rest of her life, but, you know, pasta, that's her thing. So we were eating it was a pasta with a cream sauce of some kind. And basically, I'm talking to her. I'm like, why don't you like ice cream? You know, this cream sauce is basically ice cream. If I put this in an ice cream machine, you'd have like, you know, cacio pepe ice cream or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, we eat so many cream sauces. We never consider that. I mean, ice cream at its most basic, it's an emulsion. It's, you know, sugar and milk and cream. And, so it doesn't have to be sweet. You know, you can have all these different flavors with it and make really interesting things. And, cream is just, you know, it's just a vehicle.
Yeah, and you use other cheeses as well. Feta,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've seen goat cheese,
yeah.
I've seen cream cheeses in the book. But, you know, thinking along the lines of converting something that, you know, is in one genre, pasta,
mm-hmm.
And then turning it into ice cream,
mm-hmm.
do you kind of go through categories like, what snack can I make? What salad can I make? What sandwich can I make?
Oh, like... everything that I eat, I'm like, oh, I bet this would be a good ice cream. I bet you could take, well, if you just isolated this flavor and use this, well, you can't use that, but we can substitute for this, you know, that's sort of like strategizing, like
yeah.
you said.
Well, let's talk about shiratza. I'm not even going to say it again. It's such a hard word for me to say.
It's that hot sauce.
Popcorn.
That rooster sauce.
Ice cream.
Yeah.
Rooster sauce,
yeah.
Popcorn, ice cream.
Yeah, so that was one of my first recipes for Hey Rosie. I am also an ice cream, I mean a popcorn aficionado, if I do say so myself. And I spend a lot of time researching popcorn. And anyway, I eat it every night before I go to sleep. It's like my midnight snack. And I love to put sriracha on it, but the sriracha will wet the popcorn, makes it soggy. So I have a dehydrator at home, and I one night started messing with it, and I was dehydrating the sriracha so that I could make flakes out of it for my popcorn. And I had had popcorn ice cream before, and once I had these flakes, I was like, ah, I bet this is a way to get this into ice cream without adding moisture to it. So I made a popcorn ice cream, and then I used those dehydrated sriracha flakes, and I mixed it in, and people just, like, my friends were just like, what did you do? And, a little bit of salt and this, like, really, like, you know, the corn flavor of the popcorn. And the beauty is that when you eat something hot, people are always like, oh, drink milk. Well, this kind of neutralizes the acid and the heat in the sriracha naturally because it's ice cream.
Yeah. So how often are you trying to put something in ice cream that shouldn't be
there?
That
doesn't belong there?
Yeah. Because,
every day.
I mean, let's talk about alcohol. I mean, when you're trying to build an ice cream, too much air, mm-hmm. too much water, and then certainly too much alcohol are all no-nos.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is, well, there's a recipe in the book for, I think India Pale Ice Cream.
IPI,
yeah. And that speaks to that very much because a lot of people were making beer ice cream and they're like, putting beer in it, now you're adding moisture, okay? So we reduce the beer, we reduce it into a syrup, okay? Well, that kind of works, but sometimes it can get too sweet because now you have sugar in your ice cream, you have this like really syrupy, you know, sugary syrup. So I started to think about the components of what makes an IPA taste like an IPA. It's malt, it's hops, obviously. And hops are really, at the end of the day, it's like an herbal infusion. So rather than, try to reduce an IPA down to a syrup, which would make like a pretty bitter syrup, honestly, and sweet, or try to add the beer to it directly, I just infuse the cream with hops, sort of a dry hop method, which, you know, brewers do with fresh hops, and then pulled some of the other, you know, cherry picked some of the other things from an IPA, like, certain malts, and there's a Belgian candy syrup in it, which is a beer ingredient. So I went straight to the brewer's pantry rather than trying to force the beer in and winding up with, an inefficient product.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about other pantries, pretzel, honey mustard, which is an ice cream of yours. That is the snack cabinet more than it is a pantry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I live in the snack cabinet. So, we did a bunch of like summery flavors once, and I love like pretzels and honey mustard, and honey mustard is, it's got a sweetness, and again, it sort of works without like spicy kick of mustard. And I had been infusing pretzels into ice cream and I loved that. And it just, if you let yourself not, if you don't think so much about it, these things really work, like they're flavors that you already know and love. It's just in a different way.
It's just a different vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so is an everything bagel shake.
Yeah, that was another attempt for me to get my wife to eat more ice cream. She loves those everything bagels. I was like, okay, well, I'm going
to
make you...
Is she like the only person in the world that it has to be a ploy to get her to eat ice cream? Usually it's the other way around.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we honeymooned in Italy, which was like perfect because she had her pasta, I had my gelato, and we were just like, that was fine. It was perfect.
Absolute bliss.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Sunday construction just because I feel like you certainly have this mind of building something in a specific way. Mm. And, you get a Sunday and it definitely has its layers, mm-hmm. but there's got to be a methodology behind there.
Oh, this is another subject that I can get really geeky on. But, you have to look at, I work with a lot of chefs in writing and stuff like that, and the conversations are always the same. You want contrast, you want balance, you want acid, you want sweetness, you want crunch and texture and everything. I have seen more sundaes that become a total mess of flavors and textures, and there's just like gloop at the bottom, and so I'm very careful about how to build those and what you're really going for. But you definitely have to have, I love to have some like warm and cold hot fudge or whatever. Definitely textural contrast, I think, is so important. And the selection of flavors, you can't just slap a bunch of flavors together. And it's these frozen yogurt bars vex me because, you go there and I watch people, I'm just like, none of that goes together. What are you doing? You can't put, the Sour Patch Kids with the...
You could be a curator.
But, yeah. Oh, I would love that.
Like a concierge
if
or...
If someone would pay me to do that, I would be so happy.
Yeah. Because you can go astray. Mm-hmm. I mean, even from someone who confesses their love for Sour Patch Kids, mm-hmm.
it
doesn't go with everything.
No, and I don't like them in ice cream either because, you know, they get really hard and, you know, certain things belong there and certain things don't. And, hey, it's a matter of preference, obviously.
Yeah. But. Well, I mean, we're in prime ice cream season right now. You know, you hear the Mr. Softy truck and you run for it.
Constantly.
What is your order there?
So Mr. Softy actually catered my wedding. We skipped the wedding cake and had a Mr. Softy truck instead. My order at Mr. Softy is vanilla ice cream cone with rainbow sprinkles. Done.
Done.
Yep.
Easy peasy.
Yep.
Have you encountered one since being back in New York?
Yesterday. And I'm on the hunt today.
Yeah, I love how you said that with such a straight face. Like, yesterday, and that will not be the last
yesterday
time.
Yesterday in Madison Square Park. I saw one again in Union Square. I was considering the second, but we did have dinner plans. So.
Yeah. I mean, New York versus L.A. ice cream, there's good stuff in both places.
So L.A. is just starting to, in my mind, really get some traction in ice cream. But it's different. There are a lot of imports. I mean, we have Salt and Straw out there now, which is a Portland brand. We have Jenny's, which is really an Ohio brand originally. But a new place called Magpies opened up recently that specializes in soft serve, and I'm loving it.
See, I feel like you should put an ice cream map together.
Oh, that would be fun, too.
Because I'm sure you get people asking you all the time, oh, what kind should I make? But also, where should I go mm-hmm. eat ice cream? I mean, idyllically, where within the country and within the world would you be sitting right now lapping up a cone?
Ferris Acres in Connecticut. Yeah. That is honestly that's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I know recently you got to interview Jenny of Jenny Splendid. Mm-hmm. You work for this wonderful magazine, Life and Time. Mm-hmm. You know, someone from the ice cream industry interviewing someone else from that. What did you ask her? What did you want to say through, you know, the platform of that magazine that, you know, people don't know about ice cream?
Honestly, my questions for her were a lot of business related stuff. I mean, there were things in opening an ice cream business that just blew my mind when I was like, oh, this is a really challenging product, you know? And she's been such a trailblazer and so brilliant about how she handles the business. And, but in my mind, I think Jenny and Jenny's Ice Cream they do such a phenomenal job of producing flavors that are just so clean and evocative and really just, if they say it tastes like fennel, it tastes like you're chewing on, like it's delicious. It's just the most pure representation of whatever that is. So I had a lot of geeky science questions about that too. How did you get such intense fennel flavor in this?
I mean, is that what your ice cream is like? Are you looking for that pure form of something? Or are you looking for this rounder kind of conceptual, theoretical flavor?
My like real interest when it comes to ice cream is trying to figure out how to make the cream really taste like something else, because you can go the route of like, here's a sweet cream base and let's put like a really wonderful cookie or toffee or whatever in it. And we do that too. And I did, you know, there's that in the book, but I'm fascinated by how to make it really taste like something else entirely. And, you know, that's another thing I think I really got in beer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you make an ice cream taste like salt and sand?
Mm-hmm.
And why would you want to eat a beach?
That is one of my favorite flavors, to be honest with you. It sounds crazy, but I love that like crunchy sand in my teeth after a day at the beach. You know, you have that like salt in your mouth from the water, and you got like some sand in your teeth. And salt and brown sugar in ice cream and sort of folded really gently so that you don't mix in the sugar, so it's still kind of crunchy, with flaked sea salt in sweet cream. Like that, to me, was one of our best selling flavors. People were really surprised, I think, by the fact that they liked that textural element, and I just loved it.
See, screw fireplace. I want to eat that ice cream on a beach.
Yeah.
Double up on the sand. And
yeah, yeah.
Salt.
I will say it's good. It's good. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to have you in, and you know, I'm going out for ice cream after this for sure. But everyone else should go out and check out Ice Cream Adventures out now by Rodale. Steph Ferrari, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big thank you to Whole Foods for sponsoring Cookies, the wonderful music at the top and mid part of this show, and David for engineering. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.